This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to The Reel Down. I am your host with his tail between his legs from this terrible weekend of fishing that we had, Jimmy Skinner. It's me. With me as normal, also tail between his legs, Garrett Johnson. How's it going, buddy?
It's going. Still trying to figure out what I did wrong and how to fix it for next time.
I know exactly what I did wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have confidence in high muddy water ever again.
Yeah, it's definitely tough to fish. I mean,
I should have stuck with my gut. They always say that. You hear that thrown around a lot. It's so true. I knew I shouldn't have been there before. When I was driving to that ramp at 4 o'clock that morning, I was like, what are you doing? And there was a something over here like, it's fine. It'll be great. No.
And I did that like almost 6 mile run to a spot from a ramp. And another guy made the exact same run. And like, you'd think that if you made that longer run, you're not going to see anybody for the whole day. And
yeah. No. When he passed me, I was like, oh, well, Garrett's about to have company. And that's when I moved. So I went 3 miles in, and then I went 3 more miles down. And yeah, I mean, I'll say what it was. I had an area that had a beaver dam in it, and it was making the water crystal clear, but I could get over the beaver dam with that Torquedo 1103. You could just jump right over
it.
So I made that float 3 miles down, going for that clear, warm water and, you know, spawners. And when I rounded the corner, the water had rose so much, the beaver dam had completely disintegrated and floated away. There wasn't even traces of the beaver dam anymore. And
I mean, it didn't look too bad like Friday when we went and looked at it. Then that storm rolled through.
It looked terrible Friday. Don't lie to yourself. It looks so bad.
I thought it was still fishable, but after that storm came through, it just kept rising in it.
Yeah, yeah. And we had a tornado come right over our Airbnb, blew a bunch of trees down, so we didn't even get to get on the water Friday. Because at one point we were at one ramp and there was a tornado warning, so we moved from that ramp to the Airbnb and there was a tornado warning. It sucks.
Just chasing us everywhere.
Dude, it's just, I should have just packed up and went home, man. Saving money. But anyway, so we got a totally different, well, I mean, not really. We have a different guest for you today. We have the winner from the Bassmaster Series event on Gunner's Hole, but also a current Bassmaster Elite Series angler. So this is a first for us. I'm excited. Been wanting to do this. Been waiting to see more of these guys jump in with us and kick our butts in our little niche of the sport. But without any further ado, Mr. Greg DePalma, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Nah, man. Thanks for coming on. I know this is a heavy on. You're a very popular man in our corner of the world right now, so I'm sure you're getting like blown up right now.
Yeah, it's been pretty nonstop. It's gonna go on this whole entire week. I got a lot of stuff scheduled, but it's all good. I mean, dude, whatever comes with a win, I mean, you have to take all of it and just apply it. And dude, it's like anything else. You know, this kayak game, from what I can tell, I was on the outside before I was on the inside. You know, before I fished one of these things. I saw the growth of this sport in the last 2 years take off tremendously, which I know we're going to get into, but that's one of the reasons why I decided to jump into this stuff and start doing it.
I like to hear it. You didn't, I feel like you have so many people that wait for that moment when they think that they should get into it. And it's kind of people that follow that curve. Yep. It's nice that you kind of saw it and were like, nope, I'm going to go with it now. And perfect timing for you, man. Steve Owens taking over the Bassmaster Series this year is you started on a high note. You will always know that it was ran smoothly and there was a huge amount of participation. Well, there were some dark ages in there before that, and we just won't even talk about that. But you started at a high note. So I was going to let you introduce yourself. So I was trying to do some research on you, just have a little back info. And I found this great article that actually had nothing to do with you. But I looked up Greg DePalma, and it actually pulled up Greg DePalma, capo Mafia. Of the Gambino Mafia family. And I was like, whoa, where am I going?
Yeah, so he's spelled different, I believe. He's probably exactly. D-E, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Because yep. That's like, I didn't notice the difference in spelling at first. And I was like, maybe I shouldn't bring this up. He's going to like, I'm just going to be like, yes, sir. All right. Never mind.
I'm like, yeah, I don't know that guy. Yeah. No, it's... Yeah. So you have to understand one thing. Have you guys ever been to New Jersey or never been here?
Never been there.
All right.
I've been through it one time, but I haven't stayed for very long.
Okay, well, you didn't miss out too much. If you probably went through like the Trenton up area. So I live in South Jersey. Down here where I live, this is the Garden State. This is kind of country. It is country. You know, once you pass Trenton, man, it's a whole different world. It's like New York City. You know, it's like Rocky Balboa. A lot of people talk that way up there. Down here, we kind of have a little slang, a little bit of country. But man, the fishing down here in South Jersey, a lot of guys cry about it, man, but I absolutely love it down here. Huh. Around my house, within 10 miles, I have probably 20 lakes, you know, all maybe 50 to 70 acres, but they all offer something very different. A lot of the pros that are in New Jersey, Iaconelli, myself, Avina, Galuzic, we all live right here. So what I'm trying to get at, the stomping grounds around where I live are really strong to show you how to adapt to a lot of bodies of water, because we have so many different bodies of water. Not one or two of them are the same. They're all different. We've got sand washes, natural lakes. We got creeks and flowing rivers. We have everything. It's really cool.
That's awesome. I actually have heard a lot. I'm trying to remember from who, but it's, you know, one of the kayak guys. We've got some guys up there that have told us how diverse it is. I've got friends that are upstate New York, kind of the same thing you're talking about. It's yep. you hear New York, you think one thing, but you go upstate New York and they're like, no, we're rednecks too, man. We're just as country as you guys. We're just on the other end of the state of the line, but yep. A lot of diversity up there. But well, we'll use that to lead right into it. So you know, I'm sure most of the folks listening to this are going to know who you are, but give us just a rundown of, you know, who you are. You know, where you're from originally, what got you into fishing, you know, at an early age, if that happened, just kind of working your way, and then we'll get into your, you know, elite status.
Yeah. So, born and raised here in Millville, New Jersey, where I still reside today. I'm never leaving. I'm not going anywhere. I love it around here. Our taxes suck, but all my friends are here. It's just it's a great place to grow up as a country kind of guy or boy. You know, growing up, I was fortunate. My dad had a house on a place called the Morris River. Every single day as a kid, man, I'd get done school. I'd run down to a dock on the river. I'd run down to the dock and I'd fish for catfish and perch every day until my mom yelled for dinner every night. That's pretty much what I did, you know, all the way until I was 15 years old. There was we have a place called Union Lake, which is the biggest lake in New Jersey, man-made lake. It's like almost 1,000 acres, and I remember seeing a flyer way back when. It might have been at maybe this place called Hucks, I think it was. It was like a little tiny convenience store, a flyer in there to, for a bass tournament. And I remember grabbing the flyer and I brought it to my dad. I'm like, man, I want to fish this. So at the time, I didn't have a boat. I didn't have any kind of bass boat or nothing like that. So my dad owned a construction company. I was 15 years old. I literally worked the entire summer and I saved up $500. And it's funny how things work out. I remember I finally got through the whole entire summer and I was driving with my dad and there was a little tiny low 1232 John boat on the side of the road for sale. It was $550. Bucks, so I was $50 off. My dad gave me the $50. We bought the boat. We brought it home. And my dad, you know, my dad was always an outdoorsman. So he had kind of had an idea of like what a bass boat layout looks like. So my dad actually got all the material. My dad decked out the entire boat for me. So the following year, that tournament came back up again. I was 16 years old. And we used to just shove my John boat in the back of my dad's Ford truck. And I remember going to that tournament in the morning. And every one of the guys at the tournament said, man, he's too young. He can't fish. And my dad said, well, you either let him fish or I'm going to dump him off right here. And I'll pick him up later. And like he was real about it. My dad signed the paper that he'll sign for us. And we fished the tournament. So this lake used to have a lot of pencil grass in it. And I had no clue what I was doing, dude, at all. I mean, I was green as can be. But I remember going down this grass line, it's almost towards the end of the day. I literally see a giant bass. I mean, at the time, I would have told you it was 10 pounder. It was so big. I was throwing a little 4-inch black worm. I literally casted that thing right in front of that bass. It eats it. I catch it. It was a 402. We caught Lunker for the tournament, and that was the very first time. I was like, oh my God, you can win money fishing. It literally like blew my mind, dude. So
after that.
My grandpa, if I back up a little, my grandpa always bass fished. He's the one that kind of got me introduced to the actual sport of bass fishing. But the tournament scene was kind of like fate the way it happened. And then after all that happened, my dad back then had so much trust in us. And I don't understand, probably because we grew up on river time. I'm 40 years old. Not that I'm old, but times back then were a little bit different than they are today. My dad, once I literally was a summertime after I had my boat, my dad would bring me to Union Lake in the morning at 5:30 every day in the summer, and he'd pick me up at 5:00 p.m. after work every single day. I would spend all that time as a 15-year-old bass fishing. I'd go all day and catch maybe one fish if I was lucky, but it was like the best time of my entire life.
I mean, and that's got to be awesome. What's like, you know, helped set you up for all the success you've had and to get where you are. I mean, I can't imagine not learning something 12 hours on the water every day, you know, like,
yep.
You can't not learn everything.
It's funny. So I ended up eventually, my dad always taught us growing up, if you want something, go get it. So he always made us work for anything we wanted to buy. It was just good for me because he owned the company that I can work for. And I would, you know, it was convenient because I always had a ride to work as a kid. And I always would, you know, get a paycheck end of the week because my dad just gave me cash and I was done. But I ended up buying it was a 1954 four-horse Evinrude motor off a guy. And this thing was always a pain in the butt. Every time I get to the lake, dude, I always had trouble starting. My dad just pushed me off and I would troll him later out, but he'd leave and I'd be pulling that thing. I used to have blisters on my hands from holding that rope by pulling that freaking motor all day long trying to get a start. But I'd always get it to start and I'd always run all the way back to the creek and I always start in this one spot. It's funny now today looking back, but I always, you know, bypass that spot. But every time I look at it, it's just a memory that I've always had. That's just been, you know, engraved in my brain about how it all started.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Now you're showing up to those and you got your old, all kinds of different rigs that you got decked out that fish the same stuff.
My John boat nowadays is about as bad as it gets. I completely customized it myself. You know, growing up after I got a little bit older, I did construction for my dad for 18 years. So obviously I learned a trade, you know, I did framing and trim work and, The John boat build that I did was absolutely awesome. And I still have it sitting outside right now. If I can fish out of one thing, that's what I want to fish out of. I absolutely love my John boat. I'm like infatuated with like little tiny John boats, little tiny boat nation. It's just, to me, it's the ultimate thing.
It's crazy. Cause the tiny boat nation is like popping right now. Like I see some ridiculous builds come across the feeds.
Some of those things are awesome.
It makes me want a John boat again for sure. I mean, I'll never not do kayaks, but
yeah.
You know, I've got a John boat in the backyard. I haven't touched I don't know, 5 years. But then I see these tiny boat nation guys build these boats up, and I'm like, man, let's do that. Yeah. I could get down with a little 10 horse. Like,
yeah, it's fun.
And we've got some cool lakes down. I'm down here in Alabama, so I've got some cool lakes around here that are like 25 horse max, that kayaks and the small John boats are just like the best thing for. So going on from that, did you fish in college? Did you keep that competitive thing going, or did you get away from it, you know, kind of burn out and then come back?
No, man, it just got worse and worse. The bug bit me instantly, and I never left. So I used to deer hunt with my dad too. It got to the point where like I just quit deer hunting because I wanted to fish the entire winter. A lot of times here in South Jersey, especially the last 10 years, it doesn't really get cold no more in the wintertime. It gets cold, but it doesn't freeze. So you can fish the entire season, you know, all year round.
Wow.
Yeah. So when I was like, how old was I? I was probably 18 or 19. You know, at this point, I'm out of school. I'm working full time. I saved money up and I bought my first Nitro. It was a Nitro, I think it was a 700 or 800 LXS, an old red Nitro. But the guy I bought it off, he was a Marine. He never used it. It was like brand new looking. It had no hours on it. Dude, I ran that thing all around like South Jersey, all around the Upper Bay, up to New York. I took it everywhere I possibly could go because I just, you know, I thought it was freaking just the coolest thing ever. No graphs. I mean, just me, a trolling motor, an outboard, and some gear. Then from there, I decided to, you know, upgrade a little bit. I met a guy. I started fishing a local club here called Tidewater Bassers. And that's kind of where I made my foundation of fishing. And, you know, I grew a lot of strengths that way because growing up here, I started meeting the guys that are really good around here. A couple of the guys really took me underneath their wing and more or less showed me how to win is the best way for me to say it. Because these were the guys that were winning consistently. And I was lucky. The two guys that were the baddest guys around here live right down the street from my dad's house. So I literally would get to the bus stop. My bus stop every morning was right in front of their house. And they were the ones that got me to the club because like, oh man, come on out and bass fish with us. We got a club, blah, blah, blah. I was like, all right, I'll try it. So my first year in Tidewater, it's 1 pound per point. So if you catch a 1 pounder, you get one point, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, so I fished the whole entire year. It was a 17. We had 17 tournaments that year, I think. I had 14 pounds for the entire year. Like, that's how bad I sucked. but granted, I was fishing behind these guys in the same boat every tournament, which didn't make it that easy. But
definitely not.
It allowed me to watch them fish. It allowed me to learn how they do it. And they were winning almost every time I fished with them. So here I am, you know, I'm netting all the fish to all these tournaments. But it allowed me to take the time just to watch the wind, watch how they approach things, watch how they unfold their day. If things weren't going right, what adjustments they made. And all that today has helped me out tremendously. So one of the guys, his name is Mike Sims. He is my best friend still to this day. And he's the only guy that I fish buddy tournaments with in South Jersey because he's the only guy I trust. He knows every single thing that I know. In the beginning, he was winning. He was like, you know, 10, 12 pounds, which wins here a lot, everywhere as we go. So he taught me a ton in the beginning, a lot of the areas we fish. So when we fish buddy tournaments now, it's almost like we've been fishing buddy tournaments now for damn near 22 years probably together.
That's crazy. Same fishing partner, man. That's awesome. Yeah.
Dude, we've never once in all these years ever had an argument, never had a dispute, never nothing. And he's like my brother I never had. He's just my best friend. I mean, best friend at my wedding, everything. So
at Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from. Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
With that being said, you know, if you guys are guys that want to fish team tournaments, I think the biggest thing that I've learned from this whole experience is if you can gel with your partner, that's the key to success as a team tournament. I really, truly believe that because, like I said, there's never a discrepancy. there's so many times in the water where me and Mike have so much experience together on these places. We go to make a move sometimes, or we'll tell each other what we're thinking. And there's been so many times where we say the same thing the same time to each other about going somewhere. It's crazy, man.
Same wavelength.
Yeah, it's like, but that's why we win so much, because we're so dialed in together.
Yeah.
But fast forwarding past all that, club years, I really wanted to advance, so I started fishing federations around New Jersey Bass Federation. And instantly, I had success instantly. Me and Mike started doing some bigger team tournaments. Back then, there used to be a trail called Midwest Bassers. I think it might have been out in your area, too. It was all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
We did that. We dominated it really good. We went down to the Classic of Kentucky Lake. We almost won. It was a 400-foot tournament. And this is before, like, Facebook. We had no information. We just went South Jersey-style fishing. We got back in creeks, and we just did what we did.
And that's back when Kentucky Lake was probably popping off too, because Kentucky Lake's kind of like right
now. It was just before the ledge fishing blew up there. So, but the populations were huge, the fish were big. It was just so much fun. It was like our vacation trip every year we had together in October. Then from there, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm going to start fishing the Bassmaster Opens. So in 2006, I decided to try it. Like I said, let them all in, man. I bought a brand new Nitro, and I'm like, I'm going for it. So
let's start in debt, baby. Let's do this.
Yeah. Exactly. So
start in the negative.
Yeah, it's always in the red, right? Yeah. That's why Zoom's red, they're taking your money.
But no kidding.
In 2006, there was 5 tournaments per division. It's a lot different than now than what it is now. But in 2006, my very first try, I qualified for the Bassmaster Elite Series, my first try. And so in 2006, wow. The problem was, when Chris Bowes called me on the phone and said, hey, we need $55,000 for entry fees. Guess what? I'm just a poor kid that was doing construction. I didn't have the money. So I ended up turning my dream down right on the spot. And it was the hardest thing in my entire life. I cried on the phone, dude. I was devastated. But
I mean, I can only imagine that to one shot it like that, which 90% or more of these guys, that's probably their dream. And then they never even get that opportunity. I mean, so many guys work so long just to get to it, to do it as fast as you did. And then, like you said, man, I'm in the same boat. I was the poor kid in town too. I would have never had that opportunity. When you were leading up to this, were you looking at it like you just wanted to keep competitive fishing on higher levels, or were you already looking like, this is what I want to do as a job? I don't want to be a construction guy. I want to fish for a living.
Absolutely hated doing construction, but it was the only thing that I could supplement to get my time off and make just enough money to cover my fishing. And professional bass fishing at this point was the only thing on my mind. That is it. That's all I wanted to do. I eat, slept, and I breathe the bass fishing every day of the week, and especially tournament fishing. But at that young age, I was in my low 20s. I had no idea of the business side of bass fishing. I was completely clueless. I don't know what I thought. I probably just thought, oh, if you make it, there's sponsors coming knocking your door. Guess what? That's not the case.
Not just about the fishing. It's a lot more than that.
And I feel like it was even harder back pre-social media, because I mean, for everybody listening, we talk about it all the time. Part of being a professional at anything is marketing yourself.
Yep.
You already see that probably greater than half of anybody doing any sport is terrible at marketing themselves. And that's why some people fizzle out so fast. So it back in, you know, pre-2000, probably I'd say even 2008, 2009, anything before that, like marketing and everything on yourself was probably virtually impossible, unless you're just killing it all the time at tournaments. I mean, I always go back to Gerald Swindle, you know, with the limited success that he's had as far as a win goes, but he's a personality. Well, you know, back in the early 2000s, if you weren't on TV, you weren't a personality that anybody knew. So did you have a lot of those struggles in the beginning, you know, being able to get a lot of those sponsors?
It was impossible. I didn't know how to go about it. That was the biggest problem. I had no clue. So let's just fast forward from 2006. So coming through, you know what I thought to myself? Back then, if you got AOI, if you won the AOI, you actually won some money. I think back then it was actually free entries. There was some weird thing they did back then. They used to do a lot more for the angler back then in the opens than they do now.
Mm-hmm.
But my goal was, I never had a plan B. It was, okay, let's try to figure this out, and we're going to requalify again. All them years later, from 2006 all the way, I requalified back in 2018. So put that in perspective. That's how many more years it took me.
Golly.
That's rough. Dedication is a must at this level nowadays, because it's only harder now than it's ever been. But so doing construction again, all them years, in 2017, still doing construction. I came close to qualifying for the Elite Series for years in a row. I would miss it by like a point, miss it by just a fish catch or a fish loss. I mean, heartbreaking years. And something inside of me, I know we've all heard this kind of stuff, you need to go all in. That's what just kept knocking in my head. I went to my dad and I literally quit cold turkey, and I had no plan B what to do. But it's crazy. But that winter before I quit, I decided to get my captain's license, and I never, ever wanted to be a guide, but I knew being a guide would allow me to fish every single day and only make me better. So that was the whole premise on my, mm-hmm. I wanted to be a guide. So I got my guide license.
And you're getting paid. I mean, that's,
yeah.
Well, here's the deal. Here's the deal. When you quit cold turkey and you got no plan B besides starting a guide service, it is extremely hard to make money if you're a new guide owner trying to start a business. My first year as a guide was financially the most toughest year of my entire life, because I didn't have nothing. All I had was a little bit of money in the bank to get started, and I just got by with just enough trips. But coming on to my second year, the trips I did were always really, really good. I never fish on any of my guide trips. I don't really do them nowadays, but I never would fish on any of the guide trips. My experience that I wanted my clients to have was, when you're out there, we're going to pull up to an area, but prior to fishing, I'm going to explain every single thing that we're going to do, why we're doing it, and what the layout is. And I show them every single thing, whether it was on the mapping, it was 360, if we pull up to a big grass clump. I wanted them to have the best experience ever. Well, that one first year of me doing the trips, my second year, dude, it was crazy. My phone would never stop ringing. I'd booked the entire year. I was so busy. Some of the guys, a lot of the guys would book 6, 7, 8 times a year, because they would tell me, man, the experience we have with you is just, we've never experienced that before. But that was always my goal. If you're going to come out fishing, you're going to pay me, I am going to give you the best experience ever. I held nothing back. I gave the best baits that are on the body of water I fished. And I went to the very best spots. I held nothing back. But that was the whole thing behind it. I had to build something that was so special if I wanted to get myself to the next level. And that was the whole point behind what I did.
No, yeah. And I mean, so there's a few guys in the kayak world that are doing that. And I haven't thought about it as much from that perspective until you mentioned it. Because I mean, I think of guys like Russ Snyder got third in this tournament. Russ was a hammer in the boat in California, made the switch. And I mean, he guides a lot, you know. And I mean, he's not really advertising it yet or anything like that. But I've never thought about what he's benefiting from that other than making some money. I mean, it's just, everybody already knows that Russ is hard to beat on the water just about anywhere in the country. And now if you think about that, he's gotten, just like you said, man, you're on the water all the time. Yeah. And you can just, it's basically staying in practice the whole time. So that's incredible.
It really is. And the crazy part was, here's the deal. So I would guide on the Upper Bay. This is a pretty cool little story. It's not cool. It's just a little story, but there was a campground that was there. It was like a camper only campground. And to stay here, you had to pay $1,500 for the entire season, which is cheap on the Upper Bay on a campground on the water with a ramp, with everything besides like a bathroom and a shower. So I bought this camper for $300. It was a wind up camper. I bought it for $300. It was an I must be lucky. It was an absolute mint condition. Like, they had never used it garage kept. I don't know what year it was, 85 or something, but the vinyl, I mean, it was the most prettiest, beautiful little camper ever. I brought that to the campground. I paid him $1,500. I put my camper there. I'd sleep in my camper every night. Every night I'd go to the Flying J after my guide trips, get a shower, brush my teeth, and go to the camper every single night, pay $15 a night for a shower. I mean, I roughed it, dude. I didn't have anything. So I did it the hardcore way.
That sounds like living the dream, man. Like, let's be real. Like, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah. And so my second year at the camper now, you know, I'm actually making some money. I got, you know, I'm doing 5 to 7 trips a week. And sometimes I was doing double a day in the summertime. I mean, I have a lot of cash in my pocket. I'm just hoarding all this stuff. I'm saving it all. That year I qualified for the lead series and I took my camper. So I have $1,800 invested into the $1,500 campground, $300 into my camper. And I didn't count the showers, but I ended up selling that camper for $1,800. I got all my money back and I qualified for Elite Series. It's so unbelievable how things work out when you look back on them. And I could tell you some more stuff too. Look at my shirt I'm wearing right now, but I qualified for Elite that year. I think the main reason why is because I went all in. I just did it. I never looked back. I said, I'm done. I'm fishing, man. Let's just go get this thing.
Did you not ever have a weak moment as far as you're having such a successful guide business? Did you ever like step back and think, well, I mean, like I could just do this instead. I'm still getting to fish for a living. I'm making good money. It's gotta be a little bit less stressful than following the pro series around. I mean, obviously probably saving you money if you stuck with that.
Yeah, I would wake up in the morning and I still feel like this isn't what I want to do.
That's how you know you're invested. I like it.
Yeah, so I qualified for Elites, man. 2019 was a dream come true. I'm not an emotional guy, but I could have cried on I think I might have cried the first time I walked across the stage, like a little tear did come out. I was like, man, this
guy, oh yeah.
I mean, you worked hard for that. Talking like almost over a decade.
Work.
It's got to be bittersweet to have it dangled right in front of you and you just, there's nothing you can do to get it, and then you got to grind for 12 more years. That's insane.
Yep.
So you said, look at the shirt you're wearing. Tell me a story on that. I want to hear it.
So this is Northeast Precast, the opposite side. Northeast Precast is my title sponsor. Now, this is a kind of a crazy story. So I have two really big sponsors. Northeast Precast is one. Superior Walls is the other one. Back a long time ago, this guy, John Ruga, used to come to my dad when he was building houses. John wanted to start this company called Northeast Precast. He bought the rights to Superior Walls for $20,000. But when he bought them rights for Superior Walls, he took up the entire New Jersey seaboard. If any precast walls go in, they have to go through John. Well, he used to beg my dad, let me put foundations on your jobs. My dad was a big time builder around here. Let me do foundations on your jobs. Let me get in. My dad always told him no. Because if he landed my dad, it actually would allow his business to take off, because if Eddie DePalma believes in John Ruga, then I believe in John. That's kind of how it's a small niche, you know, around here. It's how it works.
Oh, yeah.
My dad finally said yes to John Ruga, and John completely blew up. Now John's like a $13 or $14 million company around here.
Dang.
And it's full circle, 110%. Because my dad gave him the opportunity. Now looking back all them years doing construction, I installed so many plates on top of John's walls. I know the product inside and out that he builds, but that is where John came back full circle and said, Greg, you made the Elite Series. You let me. He told me, because when you make the Elite Series, laughing, you know, kind of playing around, you let me know, we'll take care of you. Well, I made the Elite Series. I called John, and John said, come on into my office, we'll have a talk. And that's kind of where the whole thing took off. And then John called Superior Walls Corporate, which is also a multi-billion-dollar company in Pennsylvania. They're the whole franchise owner. John got me in the door, and I got corporate also.
That's awesome. Golly, man.
Unbelievable.
It's like so many puzzle pieces that just fit right when you needed them to.
It's the American dream, dude. I mean, that's what it is.
I'm quitting my job tomorrow.
Yeah. You're inspiring us here. Let's go drop her.
Yeah. I own my own business. It's not tomorrow. I mean, I guess it is.
It's an unbelievable story, but you know, not to, you know, toot my horn, but you're looking at somebody that absolutely busted their ass for every piece of it.
Dude, it sounds like it. I wouldn't argue that with you at all. I mean, yep. I know that story could go on for hours and hours. There's probably hundreds of points just like that that's happened and things you had to overcome. But we'll save that for another episode, because I definitely have already got another idea in mind. But so
it's also awesome to see like how far you've come from that point and how how that's played into your development.
Getting dropped off at the lake for 12 hours every day.
I was going to say, you know, at the end of the day, I owe all the credit to my dad because my dad was the one. My dad's very successful in what he does. He had a really strong business, but there's three of us boys. Every one of us, he told us, you want something, you go out and get it. And that's how it's been my entire career with him. It's never, you know, he would do some things to help us out, but he made us work for it. You know, and that's what's lost today. I feel like a lot of college kids and a lot of these kids that are out there nowadays.
I see it even now in like the college bass circuits. I've met some of those guys, and you can tell the ones whose families are better off, and it's just kind of they're assisted along. And then there's guys in certain colleges and stuff like that you've been hearing about them come up from little bitty towns, you know, beating up on the old men at the Tuesday nighters, and now they're the top team in the country right now. So, yep. Well, let's start to dabble into our little niche of it. So you're back in the Elite Series. What got on your radar with kayaks? Do you have some people that do it? Do you know some of these bigger anglers or directors? What first brought it across your field of view, more or less?
Tiny boats, man. Tiny boats, tight water. That's my wheelhouse. That is what I grew up doing. If you guys ever come to South Jersey, come out fishing me, I'll show you exactly what we're doing. It's a kayak is the perfect boat for it because you can get anywhere. You can, it's literally, like I called it before, it's hand-to-hand combat bass fishing. And that's what I grew up doing. It's kayak fishing.
I love it. I always tell people it's way more intimate in a kayak than on the boat. You're down there on their level and you don't have even that little mechanical advantage of the boat being able to just sit still. Like I've been sleigh rides all over little creeks and stuff. And that is the coolest thing in the world.
That's what we call it. We call it bobsled. That's what we call it.
There you go.
Yeah. That's awesome. Do you think if today's kayaks were out at the time when you first had that, like $500, would you have gotten a kayak instead of a John boat? Or
I don't think so, just because of the reason everybody around here was running John boats. So, you know, I did what everybody else did.
Yeah. Right. Makes sense. Well, and then with your initial, you know, ultimate goal, you know, to get up to the Elite Series, you know, the kayak's probably not the right path for that. I think that's changing. I think that could change.
Yes.
But we're going to talk on that too. So, I think I already know the answer, but when did you first get to try one?
The first day of practice, which is Wednesday before this event.
That's what I thought. I knew the answer. So that's insane, man. You had zero experience in a kayak, but you have all the experience of a top tier, top level bass angler. Yep. So I'm just, there's so many questions. I'm trying to figure out which one makes the most sense.
I mean, to be fair, like that little 12 foot John boat you're talking about is pretty close to that old town that I saw you in. Like that's, I mean, stability wise and storage.
It is. I have a 12 or 11, six crawdad here, hollowed out crawdad that I use for certain events when I got to get real shallow.
Yeah.
The autopilot 136 is more stable than that crawdad by a mile.
That's hilarious.
So I spent on the off season here, you know, once I decided I'm doing this and I worked everything out, I spent countless hours on YouTube, dude, just watching everybody's video on kayak fishing. And I literally just went over everything. And I, you know, it's funny because I watched a few videos, how to like get into a kayak. Cause you think a kayak, it's going to be tippy. So I watched a few videos, how to get in a kayak. So I remember I took the kayak off. I went to Browns Creek Bridge. I took the kayak off. And I didn't know what to do. I'm like, do I pull it up on the shore? Or do I tie it to the dock? So I just pulled it up onto the rocks right there where I'm like, I'll just pull it over here. I put the power pole down, locked it in there. So I parked my truck. I walked back down and I'm like, well, them guys that take the kayak and kind of turn it sideways and get it to the ramp and they'd use their paddle to support yourself and they get into it. And I was like, what am I doing? So I just pushed the kayak off the rocks and I literally ran and I jumped into it and I jumped in. I jumped in and I was like, damn, I said, this thing don't even move. I mean, this is fucking awesome.
That's so crazy. So you get all your inspiration for how you rigged it up just from like you kind of know what you need from like the bass boat bass fishing perspective, but basically just from YouTube you were just like, this is the room I got to work with, and I got to fit this stuff on it. And that you just went for it.
I saw all the accessories, and I thought to myself, man, I could build something better than this. I mean, I've done construction. I can build anything. I've always built all these John boats. So my layout that I built with the coffin-style box, I built the rod racks, everything you see on there, on the things holding the graph, I built every single thing you see from hand.
That's awesome.
Because I thought that, you know, I didn't want a rod sticking straight up because I'm new to kayak fishing. I'm not used to having something behind me ever casting. So I made sure my rods are low, parallel. The box itself was sealed, never got wet, even in that big storm when I went out there fishing. All the tackle stayed dry. Everything was just absolutely flawless. It was really good.
Jesus. So
I saw that horizontal rod storage that you built, and that's awesome.
Yeah. See, I didn't realize that you had built it, but that was like, I saw one of the Bassmaster pictures of your boat, and that's the first thing I noticed. And I was like, well, hold it. Yeah. I got to get one of those. Like, I've got horizontal rod storage, but mine sit, I call them like in the ready position. So they're like, I cast right-handed. So they are literally right at my left hand facing forwards. Great for like follow-up baits and stuff like that. Yeah. But sometimes, like you talk about doing, you get back in them creeks and stuff, you got to pull that motor up, then they get in the way for paddling. So that little setup you got is pretty nice. It's inspired me for sure.
It worked out really good. I mean,
so what was your first like 10 minutes like in it? Like, did you fill it out or did you just go for it?
Oh, I floored it instantly. I put it on high. I was on 10. Here's the thing that kind of like threw me off a little bit. So like I said, I'm used to fishing out of a John boat on a trolling motor, but all of our lakes here are only 50 to 70 acres, are tiny. I put it in at Browns, and I wanted to go to the very back of Browns, and it was like 4.1 miles or 4.2 miles to get to the back of the GPS. And I'm like, that ain't nothing. Hour later, here I am, still trolling over all the way back of that thing. I'm like, Jesus, tournament, I should just rant over here. That was a little learning curve I had. The biggest learning curve that I had in the kayak is I stood the entire time, pretty much. I drove the thing on high, standing up. I never sat down. I'm not used to sitting down, so I'm not sitting down. The only time I'll probably sit down is if it's rough.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
But this week I lost three fish, one key fish, like a 6.5 pounder, because I had the trolling motor on constant. I was kind of going like in between. I was fishing a couple little ditches, but I was going in between the ditches and I had the trolling motor, and it got me. There's four ditches, and every time I got in between one, I'd put the trolling motor on three, which isn't really fast, but even in a John boat, when I get a bite and I'm rolling on a trolling motor, I still have a deck to kind of turn my body and back up a hair. In the kayak, you just have one swing motion and you're out of room. Yeah. So when I was going forward a little bit, and I'd cast up ahead a little bit angle, you know, on a, probably a 65 degree angle, I'd cast up there, they'd bite it. I never had enough to get, with the trolling motor still moving, I never had enough to get a hook. The 6.5, it bit and it came directly at me on a full cast. I'm whining as fast as I can. I finally get out to the front of the kayak and I turn the rod. I pull up on it. This giant bass comes up, goes, and just spits its trap right in my face. And I was like, no. That was day two. That was my fifth fish. And I thought that was going to haunt me, but thank God it didn't. So I have a little bit of learning to do. I'm pretty sure I have the whole entire launching process down. The only thing that was hard too was like, how far do I, when I'm pulling the kayak out, how far do I back the trailer in? Because I made a custom trailer for it. I took the bunks off and I made the PVC like a lot of you guys do. And I made it so when that Old Town goes onto it and goes all the way up, it has a little notch in the front. It actually locks to the PVC when you pull it all the way up. So
nice.
Yeah. So the other thing was, you know, I didn't know how to put the kayak on there. I'm like, do I put a tether rope? Do I push it out there and pull it up? I didn't know. So trial and error, I ended up getting it by doing that. And granted, it wasn't windy, really that windy. I tried it. I'm sure it's pretty hard when it's blowing, really. I need little side bunks on the side of the kayak, I think, to really get it lined up perfect every time. Just yank it up there and I'm done. So probably a little more adjustment on some of the stuff, but otherwise I think it was pretty freaking awesome.
That's probably the only event, or not the only, but I run a Hobie with a stern mount motor, mm-hmm. and my trailer setup, I drive it on there like a bass boat. I just drive it on there, slide the boat up, and it's all just been the best thing ever since I did that, because you can't get it up there with the pedals in on any boat that's got pedals. This has been like the best setup so far, but you'll get the hang of it, and you'll start finding the things you don't need that you do need, and little tweaks to make. But
yeah,
so it's crazy. I would think that there was way more of a, I mean, I guess learning curve would be the word, but like hang ups, and you just went for it. I mean, you just full send, like, this is cool, I'll do it.
I had no idea how to work the app. Dwayne Wiley did reach out to me, and I never called him back. I messaged him back, but I never called him and said, hey, I got problems. How do I do this? I can figure it out on my own. I was like, I'll just push buttons. I'll figure it out. So I caught the first bass, and I put it on the board, and I'm like, man, this is way harder than it freaking looks, you know, because I'm in there. I got the fish, and I'm like, I better dunk this fish again. I'm holding the fish in the water, trying to get some air to it. I put it back on the board. It's all slippery all over again. I'm trying to hold it down. I'm trying to get a picture. I must have took like 100 pitches of the very first fish because I never got it right. You know, the mouth would be open, the tail's not right. I'm not getting the full inches out of it. That was the biggest learning curve. But by day two, I got it pretty good.
My man's dialed in. What do you think about that? And compared to, you know, traditional, do you like the? I mean, we like it because it's good, better for the fish. But what do you think? Did you like the process?
Yeah, I mean, That was one of the funnest things about this. The whole thing was brand new to me. So that's what made it fun also, because it was like, when you don't know what you're doing, it's just, I don't know, it just makes it fun. It's just new. I never experienced something like this. So yeah, I loved from start to finish, and I can't wait to fish the next one.
That's awesome. Yeah. So did you, in your decision process to do this, were you looking at like, I need to find an alternative source of income. I need to find another way to stay on the water more often. I need something different to keep me fresh. What drove you to the, I mean, obviously, like, you like the creek fishing, you like the back stuff, you like the small boat aspect, but was there a professional point of interest for it?
100%. Like I said a little bit ago, I saw the growth of this starting to take off big time. All these years later, being in the business side of this stuff now, I can see that this is an avenue to make a lot of money if you do it properly. You know, one thing I can say to you guys that are going to watch this podcast, the problem with bass fishing out of boats is a lot of guys pretty much will sell their soul for a discount. If this kayak community can get on top of this before that starts to happen, I think at the ending return, it's only going to be better for the whole entire kayak community. Just don't sell your shirt for nothing. You know, make sure if you go in there with a set idea, let's say you want to get some money or you want, you know, a good amount of free product, you got to know your number. If you don't meet it, tell them no. That's what it comes down to, because like I said, this industry that I fish is very flooded. And I think the kayak side and all the companies that associate with kayak stuff, they're not to the point now where they know they can take full advantage of people, because people will do stuff for nothing.
Yeah, you know, right. And there's some of those companies out there, and we've done shows on it. And my advice, you know, I've got some sponsors. Garrett has some sponsors. You know, we're not to the level. And I would say this for most kayakers, we do have some guys like Russ, Jody Queen, a bunch of the bigger names that are making really good money. Christine, that are at that getting paid level. Which is going to open the doors for more and more of it for the rest of us. But there are some of those companies that are like, yeah, sure, 10% discount. You know, I always say, like, at least if it's a discount, it better be a good discount. You know, I you know, right around cost. And then, like you said, you know, maybe do that for a year. And then once you prove your worth, and your worth doesn't mean that you've got to be a top level angler. You've got to be we were talking about it before. It's about promoting yourself, promoting them, you know, marketing and networking. Do it for a year, and then you reconfigure, and then that's where maybe you move up to free stuff or small payments or reimbursements. You know, put yourself out there to work for them, other than being in the boat. You know, expos, seminars, things like that. And I think that most of the kayak fishing industry, or the people in the industry, see that we're like on the cusp of that. We're it's we're in that point where we've got to make steps towards it or we're going to miss that window. And that's why when I saw that you were going to do this, I was like, this is the I heard so many times this weekend after you won. People were like, oh, great. Now it's going to flood with professional anglers going to come down here and take everybody's money. I was like, why is that a bad thing? Like, if you beat them, that makes you better.
Exactly.
And these guys have already, you've already made a name for yourself, especially with backstories like you have, that you worked for every bit of this. You've already got the Bassmaster name on your, you know, on your jersey. They're already covering you. You win an event like this and you just bring that spotlight over to our little corner of the world, which is what we need right now. We need these other companies and these industries to see that we need your money too. You put your money here, it's money well spent. And I've saw nothing negative at all about you coming down here and everybody getting beat by a noob, because that's what you are in the kayaks. He's a noob. He had been in his kayak for less than 36 hours and beat the hell out of all y'all. So just be salty, folks. Do better.
My buddy texts me. He goes, man, great job out there. I said, dude, I got no idea what I'm doing. I just know how to craft and reel them in. That's it.
So did you, you know, we're still kind of in the pre-tournament stuff, but being new to the kayak, did you realize that you could load back up and move? And did you hit a bunch of different areas, or did you just kind of like, since you didn't have any experience with it, did you kind of just like dial in around the Browns Creek area? Like, I'm just going to, this is what I've got to work with.
Well, I heard chatter that I could pull out and move, but I was scared to, because I didn't want to break a rule because I didn't know before. That's the honest truth. And the other side of that is too, the thing on the paper said lines out at two. I thought that meant you had to be back at the ramp at two. So every day I'd lose a half hour. So I lost 1 hour of tournament fishing because I got back to the ramp a half hour. I'd leave a half hour early to get back every single day. And I'd get back, and day two I got back, I'm like, damn, where is everybody? And I saw, I actually
you're
saw
DQ'd
Russ.
And you're DQ'd and you're DQ'd.
I pulled out, and Russ pulled out the same time I did. And Russ said, hey, can you give me a ride over? And I asked him, I said, dude, I said, can I fish till two anywheres in the lake? And he goes, yeah, dude, you're good. I was like, oh man, I lost an hour in the tournament. But yeah, so I do have experience on Gunnersville. That's my third or fourth time being there. But I did know, I did practice different this time. I talked about this on Bashu earlier today. Like, I really poured it on in practice. You know, typically for a lead event, I shake everything off. In this tournament, in this practice, I fished for bites in practice, mm-hmm. because I knew I needed an area that I could sit in for the full 8 hours pretty much, because I don't want to move if I don't have to. So that was the biggest thing for me. So I actually hooked a ton of fish in practice, which I never do, just for the sole reason. I do know this is Gunnersville this time of year. The populations, once you find them, are usually big enough to sustain, you know, a single day or 2 day event, no problem. Yeah. So that was one of the biggest things why I also pushed on them really hard.
And a lot of new fish are probably moving into those areas.
There was a lot of things that are happening this week that made it so it made it to be what it would be. You know, practice wise, I was catching a lot of males that were like, I didn't catch any females in practice. I did catch a few that were, but not in this area. I had some 4-pounders in this other area. I fished a Brown Creek Bridge and I live scoped some big ones. But, you know, I just knew where I was in Browns. I felt like this is where they're coming. The one day was real bright and sunny. I saw a ton of beds, no bass on them, but I was like, man, if they're going to come, this is where they're coming to.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's that's just so crazy to think. Something I was mentioning to a guy earlier, did it seem like a little bit of relief? So in an Elite Series event, you're talking about, you know, 3-4 days of practice and then having to manage fish for four, you know, up to 4 days. Was this just like a lot just less stressful? Like, okay, I can just smack down on these guys and not have to really worry about burning through a spot? Or did you kind of still give it that same approach? I mean, a little bit like you would in the boat.
I felt no pressure at all. I felt zero. I think I was having so much fun in the kayak that it kind of like took my mind off of everything. I'm telling you, man, like I was driving the thing like a madman on high, just turning it hard as I could. I was having fun out there.
that's so crazy.
Yeah. But no, I really, my wife and baby was with me, and you know, I'd get back at night and I'd be happy. She's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I don't know. I said, I'm just having fun. I said, this is a, a real cool experience so far. And I told her, I said, man, I feel like I'm at home fishing just because it's so tight and so little of a boat. It just, there's something about that with me. If you look at my history, every time we go to Elite Series event that got really small lakes, I always do a lot better because I feel like I'm more at home in these small, tiny lakes.
Yeah. Than fish. So from a, again, going back to the, from a professional perspective, how did you feel about, you know, the cost difference? Cause I mean, yeah, you have sponsors that help with a lot of things in the boat world, but if you look at the number as a raw number, it is expensive, you know, fuel, you know, places to stay, et cetera, like that. Take that and then your payout that you got for this. How did that, were you, was it like, oh no, hell yeah, I can do this. Like this could be way less stressful money to be made. You know, did you look, or was it just, you took this one as like, this was just a really cool, fun first trip. I could probably do this some more.
No, I definitely thought about all this prior to everything. This is the first time
in my life that I got 400 miles to a gas tank towing something. So that was pretty awesome because when I towed a bass boat, my gas mileage is like 8 or 9. It's horrible. I'm getting like almost 15 on my truck towing a kayak. So that was a big bonus. Zero overhead, no gas in the kayak. I just would plug my Dakota Lithium every single night and charge it. Done. So I ended up spending probably, I didn't add it up yet, but somewhere from $1,500 to $2,000 total. So I won basically 11 grand if you look at it that way before taxes. So you fish a BFL, man, you pay 250 bucks. You put 1,000 in your truck and boat for that week and you're going to win 4 grand. Guess what? The kayak makes way more sense of fishing than BFL to me, you know?
Yeah.
And the other thing is too, and I just did this tonight just because I was curious. If you look at what the kayak series takes in on the entry fee and what they're paying out, dude, they're giving a lot of it back.
Yeah.
A ton of it back.
And we have people that are complaining about it.
Go fish like, a bass tournament out of a boat. And let
that's always my argument. Was like, have you never fished anything other than in this kayak? Because everybody else is robbing you blind, man. Like, there's not as much money to be made. There is a joke about how pro bass fishermen are still broke because it's so much money going into it to, you know, little to no return unless you're like, you got your guys on your MLF circuits, like winning 4 events a year, you know, that's a little different, but I'm so glad you're smart enough in the industry and know the business behind this, that you can say that. I need everybody listening to this to hold that piece of information and spread that word everywhere.
Yeah.
That we pay out good and the money's coming back to the right direction, guys. Jesus Christ.
It's the best thing going right now, period. To fish the Bassmaster Elite Series. And if you want to do it right, pre-fishing, you're going to spend 100 grand a year. That's what you're spending between entry fees and hotels and everything else. I spend about $100,000 every single year. That's what I spend.
With no guaranteed return.
With zero. I mean, you know, depending on how your sponsorship's laid out, but yes, otherwise you got zero return. You're spending, unless you really live out of your truck, you might spend $75,000, but you want to do it comfortable and do it right. You're spending $100,000 every year. And last year was probably higher. I didn't do it because of the gas prices last year. We're stupid. So when I do my taxes this year, it's probably going to be $110,000 I spent last year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, heart hurts my soul. So you see yourself continuing with this then. Are you going to dabble in the so we have 3 national trails. Bassmaster Circuit, Hobie BOS, which is man-powered only, so no motors. And then you've got the KBF, which is the oldest. And arguably, then there's a lot of argue there for most people, but you could talk to Russ. You met Russ. You could ask Russ. It's a great way to make money in a kayak because they have so many ways and little extra things you can buy into, like bonus bucks to make money. Have you looked that far ahead, or do you think you're just going to follow one? Or
I looked ahead. So I signed a deal this year with Old Town prior to the season starting. I do have 2 kayaks. I got a pedal drive and I have the autopilot. I am going to try to fish a few Hobie events also this year. The thing about it is, here's the thing. I'm going to try to do this as long as I can. We just had our first kid. We're planning on having another one. So the only reason I could ever see myself stopping is because of family life. I'm going to do the Elite Series as long as I can, but that would be the only reason why, you know, just for time at home to spend with my kids. That would be the only other reason why I think I would back out of this circuit. But right now I'm going to try to fish every single one that I can that my schedule allows me to.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it. Do you think that you've got any other, you know, your boater friends that you think you could drag over into this world and give it a try?
Prosnick called me. He says, he literally calls me on the phone. He goes, "How much you win?" I said, 13 green. He goes, "All right, bye." And he just hang up. This morning, my phone rings at 7:30 this morning. It's Pipkins. He goes, "Man," he goes, "let me hear about it." He calls me the goat of South Jersey. That's what he calls me. So he goes, "All right," he goes, "all right, go to South Jersey. Now you're to go to kayak fish." He goes, "How much you win?" I told him how much I won. He goes, "Man, that's freaking awesome." And Chad started to say some stuff. Man, I can see myself fishing out of a kayak, but yeah. will they do it? It's regardless of how you look at it, it's still a big commitment when you're already fishing 9 other events that are national events. So do I think more will come over? Don't know. It's still maybe they try 1 or 2 events possibly, but it's still a giant commitment. I mean, you know, yeah. when you're running the country like I am, it's hard.
The thing that in my head, I don't think of it as them coming over as a full commitment to like a whole season, yep. But I think if you can get them to try it once, kayak fishing seems to hook most everybody. Even if it's like they see you continue to follow this path as much as you can and enjoy it, maybe you get them out with you, even if it's not a tournament. Most folks, you get them on a big fish one time in a kayak and they're like, "Oh, wait a minute." And then you look at our rules and the places that we can go. My favorite thing to do this time of year is I can get on some of these spawning flats that the bass boat guys can't even cast to. And I just just wave and then go pitch on that bed, you know?
That's right.
So that'd be, you know, spread the word, let you guys know. I mean, yeah. I have zero. I don't care if half the Elite Series comes over. I would love it because yep. They're all not going to be as good as you or have as much luck as you have in one of these events. So we might get to beat some of them, and that'd make me feel better about myself. Now, if I fished like I did last weekend, that's not the case.
Let me tell you something. The guys that were in the top 10, they flat out called them guys. I mean, I don't care. I told somebody else this too in one of their podcasts. It doesn't matter what you fish. When you either put 235 guys on a body of water or you have a big national event, there's going to be guys that are going to be on them, and there's going to be guys that can flat out catch them. I don't care what you're fishing. You know what I'm saying? The weights they put up were just as good as an Elite Series event. It's no different.
Yeah, man. It was fun to watch. Everybody was, you know, obviously watching how you were doing because of the situation, you know, an Elite coming to our stuff. And then we were also watching the guys that we always see on top to see how it stacked up. And, you know, I said that it would probably be one down there. And I made a comment to Garrett. I looked at the day one numbers and I was like, Russ is going to make a run tomorrow. And here, when I saw him popping up the leaderboard, I was like, here he comes. Yeah, and then we had a local guy here, Cason Wallace. You know, he put up 95 inches on day one. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of people move in on him apparently on day two, which kind of ruffled his feathers a little bit, which I mean does me too. But it was cool to watch it shake out, man, and it was a great event. So let's get into the event. I want to hear. So you had history. You already said, you know, kind of the general area you put in. So tell us about your practice and breaking down in a kayak what you needed to find.
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing, no matter where I go in the country, obviously the first thing I look at is seasonal pattern, what's going on. We had a full moon coming into the event, like we were coming into a full moon. Yeah, it was today or yesterday, whatever day it was. So we had a lot of things. We had the whole week before was a good warming trend. It was getting warmer and warmer until the weekend. We had some cold front issues at nighttime a little bit, but, you know, typically – one thing I said this before too, one thing that I made myself not do because I've learned over the years now, I absolutely have a passion for bed fishing. I love sight fishing. And I know this week a lot of guys were doing it. A lot of fish were against the bank. I saw a lot of locals up there, power pole down, bed fishing, doing their thing. I kept myself off the bank because, number one, I've been burned now fishing Elite Series a handful of times. I got burnt on Seminole the other day because I focus on bed fishing. And the females never came. We pretty much had the exact same weather as Seminole, but we were on Gunnersville. We're a little more north. I feel like the fish act a hair different on these kind of lakes when it gets cold. But I really tried to focus on pre-spawn before the spawn. I wanted to get them fish that were fresh, coming off the moon, coming up and getting ready to spawn. That was my whole idea. And when I started in Browns Creek, I started in a different area. I ended up catching maybe two or three. I had a few fish follow that were decent size, never caught them, but I started working my way out and down. And I remember from the 2020 Classic, I saw the weather that was going to come this week. I saw we had a lot of rain coming possibly on Friday, but in the 2020 Classic, I fished Browns Creek. I think it's called Browns Creek because it gets blown out a lot. That's why, unless it's got some other weird reason, I don't know why, but there was this one area in particular in the 2020 Classic that stayed really clean. And I remembered that. And I went down towards that area. And when I got down there on the Lake Master mapping, there's a little contour that went into a, back into a spawning bed. I remember throwing the swim jig up there and I got smoked instantly on the inside on some grass. And I'm like, all right. And I ended up looking on the map and I looked down and there was three more spots that lined up just like this. And I went around, I went and fished the next one, bite, fish the next one, bite. Every one I went to, I got a bite. And then I turned back around and I fished it all the way back up again. I started pressing out a little bit. I never got any big ones, but I got a lot of males. And that's what kind of gave me the confidence. Like, all right, man, if I sit through here the entire day, I did not think I was on the winning fish, but I knew the possibility of them coming was a possibility.
Yeah.
Because I was catching so many fresh, green, beautiful, like they were a little bit white, just coming out, fresh males. And I'm like, man, it's possible. But after day one, towards the end of the day, when I caught them, I had three giant bites in a row. I lost the other giant day one, but I caught it like a 6.5-7. And I threw back in there again. And I caught a 5.5 pounder. And I threw back in there again. And I had another giant one. I lost it. I'm like, wow, there's definitely some fresh ones coming. I just didn't know how many. And then day two is when I really unlocked it. And I really just flat out. So day one, I probably literally caught maybe 10 fish. Day two, I had to catch at least 30 good keepers. I had to.
Jesus.
Yep.
So like day one was based really post frontal. And then day two is more like after it's kind of stabilized for a second.
I think day two was what helped also is day two, it blew a little bit and the direction the wind came in there. I think it made some current. And I think a lot of them fish is what they do in a lot of these places we fish. A lot of them fish just literally just go sit out towards the channel area until it gets right, or if there's some kind of current to make them set up a little bit. And that's really why I think a lot of the bigger fish got a little bit shallower and I could catch them fish.
Yeah. Right. So was the swim jig kind of your be all do all this week? Did you?
It, in practice, every fish came on that. And I tried to catch them on a chatterbait. I tried to catch them on every single thing. I did get a few in a white chatterbait in there, but in the tournament in the morning, I started hunting on a swim jig. I caught one 15 incher, never had another bite on it for like hours. And then I made the adjustment. I'm like, all right, I'll throw the chatterbait. Threw the chatterbait, nothing. Then I was like, well, I got to slow down. I threw a Senko around and I picked stuff apart, never had a bite. I picked up the rattle trap, dude. Game over. I just started whooping on them. I have it right here, actually. So you can see it's pretty, I don't know if you can see it. The thing is pretty beat the hell up. There you go. It's got some freaking bite marks all over.
She's man, I tried to force. So I love a swim jig and I messed up and got all my bites pre-fishing on the swim jig and a buzz bait. So I knew what I wanted to do when I went out and buzz bait did not happen, but the swim jig, and that's not true. I caught one like dink, but the swim jig, it was just happening. So it makes me feel so much better that somebody else was throwing one. Cause everybody I talked to was throwing chatterbaits, chatterbait. And I was like, man, I'll just throw the swim jig. It's fine. That's awesome. I've tried to trap too, but again, we were upriver and like you talking about the wind setting up and giving you a little current. We had too much current, man. At one point when I was going downstream, I touched 9.5 miles an hour on the motor.
Wow.
And was like, holy shit, why am I doing this? Like it was rolling on the river.
That's fast.
But, yeah. But that's crazy, man. That I don't know that. You hear most of the time when we have guys come in and their pre-fishing stories, there's a lot of spot moving or they just didn't click it in right then, you know?
I don't get me wrong. On day two, I did bounce around. I mean, I tried other stuff that I knew, but the lake seemed to be a lot different this time. The grass wasn't in a lot of the really good areas that I've caught them out of before.
Right.
One of the best areas is in Goose Pond. I've always done really well in this one spot. It was barren. There wasn't anything there. And I'm like, wow,
that's about all there was there.
Yeah, that's really weird. I was surprised on that one. And I didn't get him in there.
That was the same thing that we saw. I tried a bunch of areas, the week before and stuff like the weekend before. And there was just like, if you found grass, you found just the bases of the, of the grass lines and stuff. And we were catching them, but I don't know, that kind of threw me for a loop too. Cause I mean, last year, February, I think it was the weekend of Valentine's Day, I was up around Honeycomb catching them on a frog and burning a chatterbait over the grass. So I had this whole game plan like, well, this is March. This is going to be money. I had the frogs tied on, man. After day one, I was like, nope, don't need these anymore. There's nothing here to frog. Like, yeah.
That's crazy. There's so many times, guys, like in the Elite Series, fishing tournaments on these big bodies of water where like you have a crazy practice and come tournament day, them fish are nowhere to be found. And it's like, you got to always, there's so many times that I've done really well just starting over in the tournament and just go completely blind.
Yeah.
You know, it happens so much. It changes so fast so many times. It's like, it's almost like you don't even need to practice. Just go out there and let's just go fishing.
How many, just thinking back to the comparison, how many rods did you carry with you?
I carried 5 day 1 and I carried 7 day 2. I really tried to force the topwater bite too, because I just felt like it was right. In the morning, it had a little bit cold, but like it had that feeling like, man, and there was so much activity with busting on top. I'm like, somebody's got to be bass, you know? So I, day 1, I threw a buzzbait around a lot. I never had a sniff on it. And then day 2, I'm like, I got to probably slow down. So I threw a Vixen real nice and slow out there. I threw it for a while. First thing, I never had a bite on it. And I was so surprised. And then I picked that freaking trap up, dude. Same thing. Instantly, I'm like, what am I doing? I just got to throw a trap. Smoking it. Yep.
I think a lot of the trap bite seems to, for me, I just never have had luck with it up on the upper end of the lake. It always works for me down south, Browns Creek, Honeycomb area, like talking about Goose Pond, Mud Creek. Never have done it well with it north of there. And I tried to force the shit out of that bite. I threw that. I told him then the little spawning flat that we were in, I made like 5 laps and I probably threw the trap 300 times. Just like, nope, they're there. They're going to bite it. Nope, they're there. They're going to, no, that never happened. Yeah. But the trap on the south end of the lake, man. And then, you know, the Browns Creek area is like legendary, like classic's been one down there, I think twice, 2 or 3 times maybe. Yep. But, well, what was the experience like after the tournament? Like getting to go in, not knowing, because you know that you saw the guys were kind of creeping up on you, you know, they cut the leaderboard off, which from the bass boat world, you don't really know where you're sitting anyway. So you probably didn't have any stress, honestly, because
I was still optimistic. I was still surprised that I won, because I mean, obviously day one, them guys blasted them, you know, and typically from a lot of tournament experience, typically if you catch them really good day one, that usually means you're in an area that can sustain, you know, more than one day of tournament fishing. So I really thought them guys were going to catch them all over again. But I had an exceptionally good day. I more than doubled. I should say the top half of tournament fishing, your top, you know, 15 or 18 or so, typically repeats their day one or better, where the rest of the field typically falls off in every tournament I fish for the most part. But cutting it off, I did check it right before it cut off and had me in first place by whatever it was. But I still thought these guys are sandbagging again, man. They're gonna come back and get me. I went up to the podium and it was me and the other guy that got second. And I said, dude, I don't know if you got it or I got it. He goes, man, you got it. I'm like, yeah, whatever, dude. And then they called his name for second. I was like, maybe I did win this thing.
Yeah, you gotta watch the sandbaggers. I can't. That's probably my least favorite thing about the kayaks with the way our leaderboards work is the guys that wait to post until the leaderboard goes off. Cause I'm like, most of the time, what do you gain from that? Like, I don't know. I'd rather everybody see me beating the hell out of each of you all day. Like, check me out. But what's cool,
there's been a couple of times when like I've been so focused and honed in on an event that I don't think about submitting my fish at that point. And then later on, I'm like, dang, I forgot to submit all my stuff.
He's a lion. He's sandbagger. He's one of them.
So on the Elite Series, sandbagging got so bad, Bassmaster said, listen, guys, every single event, day one and day two, will pay the person who's the closest $1,000 every event. So now in the Elite Series, they're paying us $1,000, whoever's the closest on their weight.
That's cool.
Because Bass Track is the most viewed thing on Bassmaster.
Yeah. I was wondering why I have seen more of it, because you used to just see the guys just be like 3 pounder and then it's in the box. Yep. And I've seen so many guys on the scales now. 2.67. Exactly. That's why they're like getting that $1,000, baby.
Yeah, that's $9,000 in the year, man. That's a lot of money. If you win them all.
Something that you mentioned about how normally your guys that do really good on day one, you know, will have that, like that top 10 will repeat that on day two. There was really crazy to see how the leaderboard was different day one to day two. The names, I mean, there were still a few of y'all that you know stayed up there in the top 10, but the day one to day two just flipped. And that's what I told somebody. I was like, this is a perfect example, because a lot of the kayak fishing world is still new enough where a lot of guys still like that one day tournament. And I this was a perfect example of how a 2 day tournament you can have it on one day and then you can, you know, mess it up the next day. And then you've got the guys that just consistently caught, you know, like 85 inches, you know, they didn't have a day of catching, you know, I didn't catch a 20 pound bag. I caught two, you know, 14 pound bags, but look at me, top 10, cut me a check. So this was a really cool, diverse setup tournament. Some guys were on them. Some guys were hit or miss. There were fish caught all over. I mean, I know some guys that were way up river that did decent. I don't know. It was fantastic. So pretty cool first experience for you, though. I mean, thumbs up for kayak fishing from you, obviously. Oh yeah, this is easy.
Nothing's easy. It wasn't easy. I worked my tail off to catch what I caught. Trust me. I don't ever feel that sore at the end of the day. And I actually felt a little bit sore after day two.
That I definitely understand that. Like I woke up the next day and was like, my God, like what happened?
Yeah.
So
Garrett, I ended up going to the Goose Pond on that Sunday just to, because I didn't feel a limit the first day. So I was like, whatever, I'm going to just go try to learn as much as I can the second day. And I mean, I didn't really learn anything. I didn't catch anything until after the tournament was over. So after it was over, I just said, screw it, I'm staying out here. I'm going to keep trying to figure this out.
Yep.
And when I got home 3 hours after dark that night, I was like, oh, I'm dead. I'm sleeping. I'm out.
Yeah, the only thing you learned about Goose Pond was Goose Pond's way better when there's grass.
Oh, yeah.
If there's not grass, just don't go.
So, are you guys fishing anymore this year for Bassmaster? What are you guys doing?
I'm hit or miss.
A couple things on my schedule.
I don't ever follow one trail consistently. I'm more of a destination fisherman.
Okay.
This one, I live next to Gunners or down from Gunnersville. I live on Wheeler. It's like my favorite lake. It's pushing my nerves right now. So it's falling down a little bit. But I usually just like, I look at all the schedules from all of them. And if there's somewhere that piques my interest, like I'm going to do the one at the end of the year on the Susky, I'm going to go to that one. I've always wanted to go fish smallmouth and fast moving water somewhere else other than here, because I do it in a lot of the backwaters off Pickwick around here. If you're ever down here and you want to go do that in a kayak, holler at me. I'll go put you on some brown fish and, you know, this much water.
Awesome.
Change your life. But it's hard to say. I'm sure I'll run into you at one at some point this year. What about you,
Gary? I'll be at the
same school. My next one is going to be that Bassmaster Kayak Series Championship on Chickamauga.
Ooh. So I wish I was fishing that one.
I guess you qualified for next year's, right? With this event.
Yep.
Yep.
So, yeah, you're qualified.
If it comes down to it, our classic, your classic. Which one are you fishing?
I'm gonna have to go with mine.
Oh yeah, that's what I told him. I was like, dude, you know how much money they make? Like, go that way.
Yep. Yep.
For sure.
It's a big deal, man. You know, fishing the Bassmaster Classics.
That was a complete joke. I would never. Yeah. If somebody pipes up and says something, why wouldn't he fish ours? Dude, shut the hell up. Like, go read something.
Not even the same planet. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not. The pivotal point of this sport is the Bassmasters Classic. I mean, that's the Super Bowl. So
I mean, and that's why for it appeals so much for us kayak guys, is our chance to walk across that same stage.
Yep.
Like, I don't even have to win it. I just want to walk across that stage. Like the guys that got to do it the very first year in 2020, like watching, no one knows who the hell we are, and we still were catching comparable bags to the, I mean, it was two different bodies of water, but you know, like our guys bringing in 20 pound bags, your guys bringing in 20 pound bags. It was like,
yep.
Oh, this is sick. But yeah. So what's
for that
with your schedule with the elites and everything, what's your next one that you think you'll be able to make
for the kayak stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to fish four of the five. I'm going to fish Hartwell. I already signed up. I'm going to fish, what are the other ones you guys have? I'm fishing Susky 100%. And I guess the other one's going to be La Crosse, right? Is that correct?
I think it was La Crosse.
Yeah. So I'm fishing all them. Possum Kingdom Falls exact same time as Sabine. So I probably can't make that one.
Yeah.
No, blame Steve for that one.
Yeah. What's damn that? You, Steve. Blame Steve for that one. That's something to think about, though. So if we were to start, you know, the sport's been in a huge uphill, you know, momentum for a while. If that continues and we do start to see more of the boat guys dabble with this, because, I mean, there was rumors at one time Boyd Duckett was talking about like an MLF offshoot for the kayak guys. Mm-hmm. The FLW dabbled with it before all that, whatevered. If we saw more and more people messing with it, I could see Steve actually having to, and AJ having to consider these scheduling conflicts on a bigger scale than they're already having to do, which sucks for them because it's already tough.
I know it is. I know.
Dude, I'm scheduling stuff for clubs in one state and it's a headache. I can't imagine all this crap across the country. Jesus Christ.
Yep.
That's cool, man. Well, you know, we kept you already over what I told you, but I'm so glad to have you. It's been a cool story. You're freaking great conversation, you know, hardworking man that's made it to the elite level and then stepped down to our little neck of the woods. And
there's no step down. I would never say that. I mean, it's what you guys have is really cool, man. I'm glad to be a part of it. I feel honored, actually. Steve, I talked to Steve this morning, actually, and he told me, because I would, you know, reference, I say, you kayak guy. He goes, man, you're one of us now. So he goes, don't talk that way. You know, so it feels good to be a part of the family a little bit.
Heck yeah, man. And yeah, you'll
welcome me anytime.
Dude, that's one thing you'll see the more you get to dabble with us is the camaraderie is different in the kayak versus the world. I mean, the elite level and stuff, it may be a little different because it's the guys that have made it. But if you think about like Tuesday night boat tournaments, most of these guys are assholes.
Yep.
And then like we've got guys that in the middle of a tournament, Jody Queen, I always reference him on this. Jody Queen put up a huge limit in the tournament. There was a guy next to him struggling. He was like, here, use my rod and reel throw here. I'll go somewhere else. Like in the middle of a money making tournament, guys don't care. Like it's just a different kind of camaraderie and sportsmanship in this world. But that's man, good. We appreciate it, dude. I'm so glad to have you on. I'll reach out to you again. We're always doing, you know, filler shows and stuff like that. I'd love to hear from you again, hear more of those awesome stories from your past, and wish you nothing but success on the rest of your year fishing period. You know, I hope you crush it on tour, and then I hope you come crush it a little bit less on our tour, so maybe I'll have a chance.
I mean, I'd be happy to donate my money to you. You seem like a good guy.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, well, guys, I really appreciate you guys having me on. I had a great time, and it was nice to meet you guys. And like always, my door is always open. Give me a call if you need something, and we'll just go from there.
Sounds good, man. Well, before we let you go, real quick, did you have anybody you wanted to shout out? Any sponsors? Anybody you want to thank?
Yeah, you know, Old Town, thank you guys so much for giving me the opportunity this year. Dakota Lithium, they're the batteries I've been using now for the last 4 years, my bass boat. Transitioned them guys over to kayak. Everything's been flawless, been perfect. You know, so that's the other thing too. So this kayak thing, I'm trying to separate the majority of my sponsors completely separate. I'm going to give them the opportunity if they want to after this year to come aboard. But if they don't want to, I'm going to start, you know, chasing after the companies you guys have within the kayak community.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yep.
That was a question that I actually overlooked that I was going to ask. Cause if there were conflicts with sponsors doing this, like being an elite series angler, I didn't know if you would even get to fish any of the other kayak stuff. It is a totally different realm, but it's still, you know, competitive fishing for money. So I was wondering if there were any, you know, professional conflicts or anything there, or how the sponsors would feel about it.
Sponsor wise, no problems. The only thing I could possibly run into is if you guys were to have an event during my off limits for the same body of water. We have 28 days off limits. That's the only thing that I could possibly run into. There's a Hobie event on Santee this year that I wanted to fish that I could fish, but it's within our off limits, so I can't fish it.
Mm. Oof, that's another barrier, man. That.
Yep.
All right, Steve, AJ, get on better schedules next year.
Yeah.
All right, man, we'll let you go. Thank you so much, man. It was great to have you. Thank you for coming on and, you know, shedding the light on your experiences from both sides of the world, man. I appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Yeah. All right. Good times.
We'll see you next time.
To you. All right. Bye.
Awesome show. That's crazy. Sir. I'm almost a little upset that it was so easy for him.
Yeah.
I was hoping he'd be like, wow, this kayak thing is hard. And he was like, match, put it on high and rolled. That's awesome.
But I mean, like looking at his background, like we were saying, the John boat stuff is the kayaks that we're in now are pretty much.
And the
glorified plastic John boats.
The hollowed up crawdad he's talking about. I know what he's talking about. He's not kidding. That's like fishing in a glorified canoe. Like it's different. But that's
so I feel like crazy that's an easy adaptation that he can make.
Oh yeah.
So I mean it's cool he picked it up that fast.
I'll blame that for the reason that he had so much success so quickly is it's not really that foreign to him. Or his style of fishing, you know, him talking about liking to get up in the creeks, get in the shallows, you know, that's what most of us do.
That's how we all started almost.
All you assholes going out offshore only with live scope, man, get out of the kayak or get up shallow. Come hammer down with us. But no, that was cool. I really liked I purposely don't listen to other podcasts when we're going to have the same guest because I want to hear information fresh. So I didn't hear or listen to anything he's talked about. I only allow myself to research these guys so much because I wanted to hear that coming up story and him being just such a hard worker. And like you said, go out and get it. Like that's the guys you like to see do good. I don't want the guy who's like, daddy was like, no, here, I'll buy your first bass boat here. Yeah. I paid your entry fees. I mean, it's still work. You still got to catch the. Oh yeah, you still got to catch the fish. But I'd rather hear, you know, the poor guy do it on his own and
crawler type of,
work
come up and do it. Yeah.
So that was an awesome, excellent show. I am super pumped that we were able to get that. Huge shout out to Steve Owens. I didn't think he'd be able to make it happen that fast. I text Steve, Sunday. I was like, I know you're busy. If at all possible, can you get me in touch with Greg? He said, absolutely. I'm sending him a link to your show right now. Show him that you're professional and that it's not a gimmick. And then I got a phone call yesterday from New Jersey and I ignored it because I wasn't thinking because I was working. And then I checked my voicemail and he's like, hey, this is Greg. And I was like, click, call him back. Thank you for picking the phone back up. But this might be a start of something cool for us. I've been looking to dabble into the boat world for a new show series. And trying to figure out a way to bridge the gap for our listeners to get just as much fishing
knowledge and fishing
tournament knowledge, you know, hearing the stories of how you can make it, how these guys made it, who they had to persuade to help them do this, where they got money for that, how they were able to do it. And I'm going to try and take this and run with it. So be on the lookout. Hopefully I can make something out of this experience we've got to have with Greg. And he's a great guy. And I'm sure we'll have him on this show again, because I'd love to dabble even more into, especially as the kayak season progresses. If he's going to hit 4 of the 5 events, I'm sure
we'll see him back up there.
Yeah, I just have a feeling because it's not a new angler. He's got tournament fishing figured out. Yeah. He's just dialing it down into the kayak world.
He knows how to win events. So
yeah, that's like you said, he learned how to win. So
yeah,
that's a very bold statement, but when you can back that up, I like it.
Yeah.
Well, real quick, I'll cover the, I want to first talk specifically back to the Bassmaster event. So, as everybody heard, Greg DePalma was first place, 93 3/4 inches day 1, 96 inches day 2. So absolutely slaying him, 189 3/4.
Ryan Thompson was second with 187.
What I thought it was going to take to win it, like 190. I mean, after it rained, I thought it was going to go down a little bit, but
yeah, I was thinking 93 a day. You know, that, yeah. Like honestly,
I was closer to 95 a day. Is what I thought.
You're right. But Russ right Snyder's on. Big shout out to our teammate Russ. Mine and your teammate Russ. Coming in third place with 184.5, made a real big run on day two. But I wanted to shout out Kaysen Wallace, a local guy around here. He absolutely smacked on him on day one, 96.5. We'll get to another shout out from somebody, Dylan Smith, third place day one, fourth place overall. He actually won the TVKA and NACA event that was the joint event going on during this on the same lake, obviously. But shout out to those guys. I mean, this was a tough event. There were actually a lot of people that struggled. You had guys that zeroed on day one and smacked him on day two. You had guys do the opposite.
It's very much like feast or famine. I mean, that's kind of how Guttersville almost always is, but
here's my tournament recap. Fast water, muddy water. I caught three fish, regretted the whole day being up there. I caught three. Yeah. I caught a dink and two meh fish, you know?
I caught three good ones, and if I would have had filled a limit, I would have probably been feeling pretty good because I had a 19.5, 17.25, and a 17.
I didn't fish the Bassmaster because of me spending all of that money on my daughter's new karate fun stuff and weapons and crap. But I'm not upset about that now, because that'd have been money gone. I don't know. I would have completely changed game plans. I honestly probably would have been down there where he was, because I was already thinking about fishing Sunday, even though I wasn't in the event, just to see what was the lake was doing. Like, I'm probably going back this weekend. I know I'm going back in 2 weeks. I'm taking this butt kicking to try and learn the lake this time of year in these conditions, just to put it in the back of my mind for in the future. But yeah, it's crazy. I really did. I said Tuesday or night or Wednesday night, I said Browns Creek will have either the winner or somebody in the top five. And
yeah,
I was right.
I mean, it's going to, it's almost always. And it's, I mean, it's just that time of year that, like, if you can locate those pre-spawn fish and, or stay ahead of them and know where they're coming to, like what Greg was talking about, then you're gonna win it. Like, it's especially if you got that locked down in somewhere like Browns or Goose Pond or something like that, where the big fish are, like the bigger fish, I guess.
Yeah. before we get off the Guntersville subject, if everybody didn't see, go check out Joe McElroy's story. Joe Mac had a very dangerous close call, and he's like one of everybody. If you know him, he's one of your favorite people. He's one of the nicest, most giving, funny guys on the planet. And I want everybody that's in the kayak world, whether you're a tournament fisherman or not, I'd like you to go see what happened and read and listen to his videos on what happened and everything, just to know that it can get away from you real quick, even in, you know, a high level top tier kayak. It doesn't matter. Mother Nature's a way better bitch than that kayak is. So,
I'll go watch the videos of that big 14-foot 360 tumbling doing in the undercurrent current
like 300 that. Times.
Yeah.
Hey, just to pique your interest to go look at it anymore, Joe is in 56 degree water, I think. Floodplains, bobbing up and down to keep his head above the water, even with his PFD on, for 45 minutes before the rescue squad could get him. Yeah. So go check that out, just to make you a little more aware of how fast things can go wrong. But enough of the gloomy stuff. We're glad Joe's still with us. We love you, buddy. But I got a few more tournaments to recap real quick. We'll start with the King of the Kayak on Little Okmulgee State Park in Georgia. 29 anglers, 5 fish limit. First place, David Abbott with 73 inches, so tough fishing out there. Second place, Quentin McMichael with 68.75.
Is that a third place? Spotted Bass Lake?
primarily, and if this last fish I'm going to say was a spotted bass, then Jesus Christ. Third place, Jason Lee was 68 and three quarters. Brady Shaw is down in seventh, caught a 23. So I'm going to have to go back and look and see if it was a spot.
Yeah, go look at it.
If it's a spot, it's I'm going to go fish there. Yeah. Like, I've caught a 20. I think I've got a 21 inch spot, and that's stupid. Like, I'd like that's a 23 for a. We just covered the kayak Bassmaster Kayak Series in Lake Gunnersville. Quick rundown again. 234 anglers. Greg DePalma with the win, 189 and three quarter. Ryan Thompson was second, 187 and a half. Third place, Russ Snyder's with 184 and a half. And there was 223s caught, because me and you were talking about this, that we hadn't seen any freaks caught. And there were 223s caught by Daniel Rodriguez and Jay Mueller, both on day two. So the big girls were moving up on that one.
Yeah.
The NACA North Alabama Kayak Anglers, Tennessee Valley Kayak Angler open event, joint event, had 110 anglers. That's a record for NACA. I don't know if that's probably a record for Steve-O too. I don't think TVK has done 100. I know the Tennessee Bass Nation has, but
close to it, but I don't know that they've passed 100. That's a lot.
Yeah, but first for place.
A grassroots club.
Yeah. So first place, on this is on Saturday, Dylan Smith, 95 and a quarter. Second place, Lance Burris with 89. Third place, Coy Jones with 88 and a half. Moving on from there, we got the Queen City Kayak Bass Fishing on Yadkin Yolo, the Yadkin chain in North Carolina. 120 anglers, because they do it big up in Queen City with their infamous four fish limit. First place, Kenley Martin with 82 and a half. Second place, Landon Smith with 77 and a half. Big gap, first, second there. Third place, Austin Vang with 75. Next up, we have the Natural State Kayak Anglers on Lake Wachita. I almost say that wrong because I make fun of it and say it wrong on purpose. I always say Owachita just to mess with people.
Owachita.
And I almost said that right then, but I got it right. Wachita. 42 anglers, 5 fish limit. First place, Corey Hopper with 83 and a half. Second place, Chris Robertson with 81 and three quarters. Third place, Eric Couch with 79 and a half. And then you also had the... Oh, this could be a typo. Maybe it's not. It says the Natural State Kayak Anglers again on Table Rock. They may be, I think they do it. They do a 2-day event, and it's on two different bodies of water.
Two if different I remember lengths, correctly. Like two different events, essentially. Yeah.
So Table Rock West, 52 anglers, 5 fish limit. Table Rock is a lake that I really, really want to go check out. 52 anglers, 5 fish limit. First place, Michael Funderburr. 89 and a half. Second place, Kyle Long with 83 and a quarter. Third place, Josh King with 83. And that is it for the tournament coverage for the week. The Bassmaster was epic. Greg DePalma is an awesome dude. Stoked to have him on here. You know, hear how much he likes it. He didn't say kayak fishing sucks.
Well, I wouldn't say it sucks either after I just won $13,000 out of one.
Right. Dude, I'm telling you, ROI, baby, return on investment. I'm glad that was something. I'm glad that when you're on that level of pro anything, you have to be thinking about it as a businessman. It was great that every time I had one of those questions, he had already had that consideration. Yeah. And it's great that people are calling him like, Prosnick. How much did you win? 13,000. Right. Bye. Click. Man ordered a kayak 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Oh, well, man, you got anything else to close it out with? Anything you wanted to hit on about the tournament?
Other than just how much I sucked at it, I don't know. It's definitely a good learning opportunity, though, and that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Just keep my head up. And
dude, I felt better after seeing so many people struggle. Like, yeah. I finished 30 something in the local on Saturday out of 110, and I had 3 fish. That tells you how shitty the tournament was.
I mean, you didn't have 3 like giants either.
No, I had 2 decent, 2 like meh and a dink. Like,
yeah,
I caught the dink on a buzzbait though, so it's all good. Like,
yeah, makes it worth it.
Buzzbait bite. I caught fish today. I went. Walked around a few little smallmouth places around here and caught them on a chopo today. So I'm feeling good right now.
Getting that time.
That's cold water too. But something I want to hit on real quick. don't have the full graphic, but just wanted to let everybody know the Del Hollow Open event that we do every year is coming up the weekend of April 22nd and 23rd, sponsored by Eastport Marina and hosted by Eastport Marina. So we'll be down there. I know a bunch of the hosts are coming down. We're going to fish the event. It was a request a lot of folks had last year. It was, why weren't we fishing it? Mostly because that's kind of a break for most of us. But
yeah,
and I suck at Del Hollow. That's why I'm not fishing it. If I can get Garrett to
keep
or Riser or Russ or someone to like guide me between now and the next month, just so I have an idea of what to do, I might fish it. I'll be fishing, but maybe not competitively. But yeah, so make sure you sign up for that. I know that there's a Tennessee Bass Nation event going on, but if that's not your thing, if you are a local and you're not fishing one of the Tennessee Bass Nation events, come put your money in the hat of Del Hollow. We got food, we got beer, we get music. We're up in the really nice wedding venue up at the barn. Great parking up there. I mean, I know it's out of the way for a lot of folks, but it's a good time. We're gonna have Richard on probably in the next 2 weeks. He wants to come on and talk to the whole tournament side of the world. And again, there's a lot of incentives for out-of-state anglers. The West Virginia guys usually show up. Georgia guys usually show up. So yeah. Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, fucking Kentucky, anybody and everybody, just come hang out with us. It's a fun time. Like, everybody that signs up leaves with something. Like, the giveaways are stacked. Yeah. Last year, Richard gave a motor to the guy that blanked. Like,
yeah. Kenneth, that's one of our guys.
Was it?
Yeah, he still has that motor.
I'm sure he does. Yeah. Like, they didn't want to raise their hand. He was like, who's zero? And they were just like. Yeah. And then he was like, here's a Newport. It's like, oh, yeah, hell yeah.
Glad you raised your hand now.
Yeah.
Like, damn, I should raise my hand. I mean, I zeroed the second day, so does that count?
You did. My man hit both highs. Or, well, the high and the low.
Yeah.
Day one winner, day two zero. Old goose egg. It's okay. I zero like every time I'm on that lake. I went to the spot you went to and zeroed. I went where you told me to and zeroed. Like, that's how much I suck on Del Hollow. Oh. I can catch fish anywhere else in this freaking country. I cannot do it there for some reason. I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah. You got time to learn.
Yep. Maybe I should be spending all my time there instead of on Gunnersville right now. That's just a haul. Well, all right, man. I guess that's it for the show this week. Everybody tell us what you thought about this one. Show Greg some love. Go follow him up. Let's stack up his support from our side of the world and give him good wishes. And or, you know, if you're kind of pissed that he took your money, you can tell him. You know, we like that too.
Can't be mad at him.
Nah. Well, that's it for another great show, folks. We appreciate it as always. We will see you next week. I think we'll have Hobie winners on. Is there a Hobie this weekend?
Caddo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll have winners on that one. That's a bucket list. Like.
Yeah, that one's. I'm already seeing some awesome pre-fishing content coming out from that. And it's.
Oh, so jealous.
There's some good ones being caught right now. So.
Oh, I bet. Well, we'll have those winners on for you next week, guys. So be looking out for it. Thanks again, and we will see you next time. Peace.